I saw a thought from Ramosha, which set a thought process going, and together with a thought from the share that a thought from the Sfas Emes. So, if I were to ask you up front, and I know you're all bekim in the parsha, when the Torah says the mitzvah of tshuva, which parsha is the mitzvah of tshuva mentioned in? So, of course, you'd all would assume it's parsha's nosa. Like, where else would it be? But parsha's nosa. Now, it does talk about tshuva later on in the Torah in multiple places, but the Rambam understands the primary mitzvah of tshuva is the mitzvah of vidui, and the pasuk of mitzvah vidui is in this week's parsha. In context of what's known as gezel ager, so the person steals from a ger, and the ger has not married and have children and does not have children. So he dies. So there's no children as Yerushim. He doesn't have any other relatives, halachically, which are Yerushim. A person, a member of Klai Yisrael, passes away without children. So he has a father, he has a brother, he has uncles. Eventually, there's somebody in the male line, you know, of genealogy, which is a Yerush. The process of Yerusha basically works. So we go first to children, if there's no children, but they're ready, there's grandchildren. No, they had children, the children died, but they already had children. So the children predeceased the parent, but they already had given birth to progeny. So the grandchildren would get the Yerusha. There's no children, there's no grandchildren. So then the father gets the Yerusha. The father is still alive. The son predeceases the father. The Yerusha goes to, no children, it goes to the father. The father's not alive, it goes to the brothers. He has no brothers. It goes to the grandfather. Well, the grandfather's not alive, so it goes to the grandfather's children, which would be the uncles, or their children. Eventually, somebody's going to be related. You keep going up the line and then going out like this. So eventually, there's somebody out there. He's your 14th cousin, but he's your 14th cousin, so he's the Yarish, right? So, but a ger has nobody. So the Torah says, so what do? You bring it to the Beis HaMikdash, and you give it to the Kayan, and in the process, he brings a Korban. So the post of a case where he had sworn falsely to the ger that he hadn't stole from him, and that was not true. And now he admits his lie, but he's vado, and he says a vidui that he'd done so. So the Torah writes the process with the language of he's vado, and this is where the Torah says the mitzvah of vidui. Right? So you know, where does the Torah say the mitzvah of vidui? Here it is in this context. So it's a good question to ask, why in the world does the Torah share the mitzvah of vidui in the context of gezel ager specifically? In the context of gezel, and Gezel Ager specifically. So the Sfas Emes, I'm just going to mention briefly because I don't want to, that's not where my focus is going to be. The Sfas Emes says, that's a fascinating thought that he says, he quotes from the Chiddush Arim. The Chiddush Arim says, what the Torah is telling me is that the root of all chait is rooted in the concept of Gzela, which is not totally foreign out there, because if you look at the concept, you know, because I'll say one place, a person has a package worth of averus, the one which is going to first testify against them in the Bezen Shomala is Gzela. But why Gzela? So the Sfas Emes says, because the world belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're all his guests, and he gives us a right to be his guests based on certain mitzvahs. So the same way we would argue, if I have a big sign outside my door, do not enter, coronavirus. No, if I have a big sign outside my door which says that you can only enter this house if you're wearing a pink hat and blue and purple shoes, right? I'm a mushugana, right? But you're still allowed to enter my house without those accoutrements, right? You're only allowed to eat food in my house if you're wearing three nose rings. I'm giving permission to any person who does that to use my food, and otherwise not. Very simple, right? So am I normal? No, I'm not normal, but it's irrelevant. Now I'm the owner, and as the owner, I say you have a right to these items only if you do X. If not, you don't. So Russia was the owner of the world, and he says your rights to partake of the world are predicated on following these rules. No rules, no rights. So you're a Gazlan. So Betzim, the root of all of errors is in the concept of Gzela, the idea that I have a right to take things without paying my dues. in the do's of taking things is the Bereshim's mitzvahs. That's how the Sasemis approaches it. A fascinating idea to think about. We spoke about this once in the concept of Baltashkas, that the reverse sees Baltashkas as being the roots of really the set of mitzvahs of Baltashkas, because I'll compare it to what is Zorah. Because the mitzvah of Baltashkas is that you're not the owner. The Bereshim is the owner. Only the owner has a right to destroy. And therefore, Baltashkas is sort of like the foundation of all of the mitzvahs, this idea of, remember, you're not the owner of the world. There's an owner of the world who only allows you to partake of the world in a certain way. Okay, but that's the point that the Sas Emes says. Ramosha comes along and says that Rashi also mentions, he adds one more point before he says that this is set immediately adjacent to the idea of Matnas Kahuna. He says, because that a person who withholds Matnas Kahuna, so you have the Gezel Ager, and then it talks about the Matnas Kahuna, and then it talks about the Soita. And Rashi says there's a flow. The person who withholds Matnas Kahuna eventually will have to come to the Goyen for his wife being a Soita, etc. So why would you think that the concept of Gzela is mentioned in the context of Gezel Ager, taking Matnas Kahuna, etc., not giving Matnas Kahuna, etc.? He says these are things which people tend to rationalize. Right? I'm not really stealing from the Kohen. It's my items, which I'm admitting to give to the Kohen. The Kohen gets plenty of other things, other people. You know, the Kohen is quite rich. Actually, he's quite much more rich than I am. Everybody's giving him the matanas. I could use the matanas. You know, like, why should I give the matanas? You know, like, anyway, the rabbis, they're corrupt. You know, we can make, you know, the whole thing, etc. Right? I'm not really stealing. Is it really stealing? You know, Rabbi, please tell me, because the more it says, it's not even clear who owns it. So it's not really called stealing. I'm a shingle lam, and I remember learning one time the sugya to Gemara over there, the more it says, Mom Shayla Toivim, you know. Okay. Gezel Ager, right? So, Ramosha adds a little bit of a homiletical drush twist over here. Right? He's a single guy. He doesn't have any relatives. He's not related to anybody. It's okay to steal from him. You know, he's quite a rich guy. It's okay. And Rush has that he's a rich guy. It doesn't say anywhere that he was rich. But you said you can see in a scenario where somebody would rationalize, that's not so bad. He says, what we're making a mistake over here is that the issue of Gzela is rooted, he says, and the damage I'm causing to the person. Incorrect. The issue of Gzela is because you can't steal. Period. You have the right to something which isn't yours. All right? That's the point over here. It's not relevant how much damage I'm causing him, because that's not the point of Gzela. The Isur Gzela is one may not take from somebody else. So the root of the problem is that the Torah needs to address these things, because these can cause potentially people to do things we shouldn't do. I'd counter Moshe. So I was thinking about this. It hit me. Like, let's talk about the mitzvah of tshuva for a second. So the Meshech Chochma points this out. Everybody asks the Rambam, the mitzvah of tshuva, the Rambam says, is vidur. I mean, tshuva is much more important. Like, vidur is like, you know, the last part of the tshuva. So the Meshech Chochma points out, so let's get this clear. So the person has been stealing until now, or he's been eating tray for food until now. So what commands in the Torah's Mechai of him to stop eating treif and to stop stealing? Tshuva? No. The Isser Gzela is telling him to stop stealing. And the Isser of eating treif of food is telling him to stop eating. I don't need a new mitzvah called tshuva to tell him to stop. Right? The original mitzvah tells him to stop. Right? The idea that a person should have charata by the fact that he did something wrong, if you need to command it, it's going to be pretty, listen. It's like the parent telling the child, listen, say you're sorry. I'm sorry. If you don't get it, that you did something wrong, and I need to command you to have regret, we're not working. So where's the mitzvah tshuva, the Meshech Chochma says? The Rambam says it's in the vidui. So what's the point of vidui? So there's a lot of talk about the point of vidui, but it hit me that the point of vidui is to recognize, stop rationalizing. The vidui is the act of saying, yes, I did something wrong.
period. No excuses, no explanations, no reasons. Simply, I did something wrong. Which is fascinating. The Rambam says that the formula of vidui is chatosi. One word. I once saw an article on Aish.com, I don't remember, like the last three years, about the comment about apologies nowadays. You know, apologies by politicians and by, you know, high-profile entertainers, etc. They said something wrong. If I cause somebody any pain by the fact that what I said, I really regret the fact that I did it. And the reason why I didn't really read the whole article, I didn't realize the implications of what it was saying. So what it's saying is that it's not an apology. It's not taking ownership for what you've done wrong. It's giving an excuse. Excusing yourself is not apologizing. It's a form of rationalization. So the Rambam says that the mitzvah of vidui is not to explain to Kadosh Baruch exactly what you did and why you did it and what your motivations were and why it was okay. You know, it's chatasi. Simple, one word. Yes, I have done something wrong. Period. So if Ramosha is right in his point that the root of the Torah gave this conversation specifically because here people tend to rationalize, that's what the Baruch gave the mitzvah vidui. The mitzvah vidui is no, stop the rationalizations, stop the excuses, be willing to own up to what you've done wrong. Because you can't really correct something until that happens. So forget about the impact on the one who receives the apology, that they don't feel that there's an apology there. But the one who's fixing himself, as long as they're not really taking responsibility for what they've done, they're not going to fix themselves. So the Rambam comes along and says that the mitzvah is vidui. The real mitzvah is tshuva. Tshuva means to correct yourself. Correct yourself means stop stealing. But if you don't figure out why in the world you're stealing, because you keep rationalizing that it's okay, you're not going to stop stealing. You make a decision to not. The original mitzvah of Gzela tells me don't steal anymore. I get it, right? But that's the issue over here is that you're cutting corners. Not paying taxes is not really stealing. It's just sort of not paying taxes. And anyway, it's the government, and the government is corrupt. And you know they're bringing in they're brutal people anyway. So it's okay to take money from them. And anyway, why should the money go to me? Because like you know, it's better than going to this lowlife over there who you know who does who knows what. Like, what happened? We start playing games in our minds. That's where Gzela, that's where we lose it, on the fringes. Then the fringes are worn away, then the next section becomes the fringes. I mentioned to you once that, you know, Dale Carnegie has this aura in his book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, that nobody looks at themselves as bad people. He says, he had this conversation with the warden of Sing Sing. He says every single criminal who is incarcerated there has an explanation for why they did what they did. Every single one of them. Now, I'm not saying that we belong in Sing Sing, you know, but right? But we're the same way. The things that we do right, Baruch Hashem. The things that we do wrong, I'm not a bad person. It wasn't my fault. I can't control myself. It's hard. I'm not ready to do that yet. You know, we have explanations. Now, some of them might be Emmas. But some of them might be that we're playing with our minds. The Shira Das says the same Yisoid, and he says it in a fascinating way. He says that Yaakov and Laban have a conversation, and Yaakov tells Laban, Rachel bitcha ketana. So Rashi says, what was the conversation? He says, listen, I want to marry Rachel. You might take a Rachel from the Shuk and give me that one instead. No, I want your daughter, Rachel bitcha. You might switch the names of the older daughter to the younger daughter. No, Hakatana. Right? This is Laban is a Rama. He couldn't care less. So what was Yaakov trying to accomplish? He says, Laban wasn't a Rama in Laban's mind. Laban was an upstanding member of society. I wouldn't fool anybody and take something they don't deserve. I wouldn't do that. He wants to marry my daughter. Give him the, but you know, he never really said that. That's okay. They minds about that, it's okay to do it like that. You know, it's not my fault. You know, Lava comes back and says, "Listen, I would be willing to give you the younger one, but Lo Yosef came to come. No, it's meaning I'm a dinner. It's not my fault. That's the rules of the community. You have to give the older daughter first. So what do you want from me?" Lavan in his mind was an innocent person. The root of our problem is that we tend to make ourselves innocent. So Vito is taking ownership. Is not no rationalizations. Which one? Rachel Bichat Tana? There's Tal Zerov, the Shiri Das. Shiri Das says that's like... Yeah, what are you thinking? Like, what, you know, come on. This is loving, you know, like, you know, we're talking about loving over here. So you have the best devious lawyer in the whole world, and you're making a contract with, you know, three words. Ah, now I got him over the barrel. You know, like, really? The guy has 17 tricks up his sleeve. Right? Yaakov understood that. No. That's not, people don't look at themselves like that. So, I think it's a tremendous insight. It hit me that this is a tremendous insight into what the mitzvah of Vidui is. Vidui is that ability to bedafka not say a lot of words. It's bedafka to look at the avera as an avera, simple. And when that is the situation, you don't need a lot of words. I don't need to explain. I just need to say, yes, I've done something wrong. So Nosan Novi comes to David HaMelech with the whole story about Sheva, and David HaMelech says, Chatasi. Period. Right? So, it's taking ownership is one of the challenges we have. And as adults, we have this problem. We have with kids, you see with kids all the time also. Like, they can't, you know, saying I'm sorry is like, you know, is horrible. It's like really hard, you know, like what's so bad? Because when I say I'm sorry, what I'm saying is, yes, I've done something wrong. We're mamish diminishing ourselves in our eyes. Even the loved one looks at himself as a good person. Why? Because nobody wants to look at himself as a bad person. Nobody can define themselves as bad. We know deep down that that's not... We see ourselves being diminished. We're taking an exit with this machine, and we're shrinking ourselves. It's very painful. But the truth is, and we know all of this, it's not what's happening with us, that the person who gets up there and gives an honest apology, we respect 10 times more than the guy who gives this convoluted explanation of why in the world it wasn't really his fault. Because what is he doing when he's doing that? He's publicly saying that I'm scared of being diminished. That's exactly what he's saying. I can't deal with that. I did something wrong, and that I'm the one who has the problem. I can't deal with it. So even though it's obvious, everybody around me, except for me, I'm saying I can't handle the truth about myself. So I lose respect for the guy. But the person says, you know what? Yes, it was wrong of me. I did something wrong. I wish I hadn't done it. I hope never to do it again. And I feel horrible that I did it. Right? When I say those words, I'm taking ownership of what I did wrong. I say, wow, the guy has the strength and the godless to do the right thing. So my respect for him is greater. So if we can stop for a second and realize that motivationally you gain more by admitting than you gain a true admission than by the fake admission, it'd be that much easier. So the HR comes along and says, no, you can't admit that. Most of us know that we do things wrong. And we say things we shouldn't say, we react where we shouldn't react, etc. Most people are able to forgive, just like they want to be forgiven. They're able to forgive as well, but they only tend to forgive people who take responsibility. When the person sort of like forces it back on me that I'm the one who's there insulting him and saying he did something wrong by this convoluted cheshbon. I don't want to forgive him anymore. Like he's as it were, he's putting the blame back on me. I'm not going to forgive him. But that forgiveness, when a person truly owns up to it, you know, it might take a few days. But you know what? You know what? The person really, really owned up what he did wrong, recognizes what he did wrong. He has remorse. He's going to try and do better. I get it. He's human. I'm human. We're all humans. Let's move on. So I don't know how to, like, the Yetzer plays games with our minds. And I don't know how to, like, overcome that. It's because it's like you see it happen like 99.9% of the time, and it's absolutely ridiculous. Like the reason why we really respect the people who do give an honest apology or statement is because they're the muta. That's why we have such respect for them, because you know how hard it is. So you say, well, the guy who could do that, wow, that's really special. It's sad that it's so special, because you know, in a normal functioning society, right, hopefully in a marriage between a husband and a wife, that shouldn't be too special. The husband and the wife did something wrong. They're willing to own up and say, you know what, I did something wrong. But the reason why I did it, because, you know, I really thought, you know, that, you know, you meant this, and, you know, anyway, you know, last week you did something like that similar to me. Anyway, you know, like, that's not an apology. Apology, you know what, yes, you asked to take care of something. I didn't take care of it. That was wrong of me. I really wish I had taken care of it. I'll try not to do it again. And I'm really sorry. I really feel bad. I apologize. That's an apology. So that was the thought I saw. I saw from Ramosha, you know, based on what Ramosha said, and I thought it was a very. I know it's not the Yom Nerayim yet, you know, but you know, gearing up for my Yom Nerayim drushes, maybe, you know, together with the virtual Shifer, you know. I know Mark is, I guess, thinking about that. Yeah, you only have to deal with one day worth of. How to get a Kiyas Shofar. Hopefully, Mashiach should come before then. If Mashiach doesn't come, hopefully, we should be gesund, and the situation should be better. Yeah. I guess the next part of the question is, will they have to wear a mask or not? I, if you could end the thought, the Torah continues into the Saita, and then it continues in there into the Nazir. By Nazir, so Mithil Yo says a fascinating thing. Nazir, Chazal say that a person who sees a woman who's a Saita, he should be Yazir Atzman Yain. So Mithil Yo says, so why? Because he realizes that this happens to people. He doesn't want it to happen to him. So he takes it upon himself to be a Nazir. So that's what says, I mean, I would have suggested a simple thing. If a person sees what happens to a Saita, that is the biggest motivation in the world not to do it. To do it. Right? Seeing a person explode in front of your eyes, it's probably pretty motivational that you shouldn't do this thing. So that's what says that the biggest motivation in life is that it's not done. Period. Nobody does these things. Nobody does it. I'm not going to do it either. Well, people do it. Well, listen, look what happens to them. Well, that stupid idiot got caught. I won't get caught. Right? Once you've crossed the red line that it's called, it exists, you've broken down a tremendous barrier. The biggest barrier against hate is it doesn't exist. Once you went past the barrier, it does exist, it's much harder to control yourself. So you need to do some technique, something to make sure that it doesn't happen. Yazir Atzman Yain, do something. I remember there was a maisa once. They say from the Chiddush HaRim, that the house was an open house, as you see them going in, people going in and out all the time, etc. So a valuable silver kois was taken. So somebody suggested to the Rebbe that maybe what happened was that this individual had just been there, had taken the item. So the Chiddush HaRim responded, "Was high shtetach in the Torah lo sing naivi?" Right? How could it be? The Torah says you can't do it. Like, in his world, the Torah says you can't do it. It doesn't exist. So you're suggesting that somebody stole? Can't be. It cannot be such a thing. It's impossible. Right? One of the Chassidim who said, we have a story because one of the Chassidim said over the story, it's recorded. He said, when I heard that language, I felt as if there was a brick wall between myself and Zayim. That the Rebbe had said it with such conviction, it's like Pasha, it's impossible. It's similar to throwing yourself off of a person with throwing yourself off of a roof. There's a natural instinct against it. You can't do it. There's individuals, whatever reason, mentally they're not healthy, so it happens. But a healthy individual, it cannot throw themselves off of a roof. They can't do it. There's nothing stopping them physically. It's not within their realm of actions. Geneva is not in the being in this situation. The act of being not true to her husband, the meal and the bowel, it doesn't exist. Oh, it does exist. It happened. I saw it happen. I saw it in front of my eyes. What the results were. So it's almost we have a stira. The yisod of the tikkun of chen is to admit that it happened and take ownership that it happened. And the best tikkun against chet is say that it doesn't happen. So saying, well, I didn't really steal is better because this way I'm not admitting that I steal. Right? So the Torah juxtaposes the 2 points. No, no, that's not true. Once you actually have done it, the only solution is, right? I think the analogy is when a car swerves on ice, right? The natural instinct is to try and turn the wheel away from the swerve. But all that should tell you that that's not what you do. You turn the wheel towards the swerve, and then you can take control of the tires and then direct it back. But if you turn it away, it will continue to spin out of control. Because you're out of control anyway. You have to recognize which direction you're going, and then from that recognition of looking towards that direction, then you can move the car back to the right direction. So that's what Vidui is. And that's why Vidui is so integral to the concept of tshuva. Because at first glance, Vidui seems just like the icing on the cake. You know, the main thing is stop doing it and have charata. What's the Vidui for? The Vidui is the act of taking control and putting it back in the right direction. Okay, it's a little bit of a short share tonight, but so a few things to do tonight, but I wanted to share that thought with you. Okay.